Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Local reaction to the State of the Union address. The impeachment process continues and a look into the ongoing legislative session in Pierre. It's Wednesday and it's time for our weekly get together with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us from the Tom and Danielle Ammon Foundation studio in Aberdeen, we have John Schaff. He's a professor of political science at Northern State University. Welcome, John.
Good to be here.
And joining us here in the Sioux Falls studio across the desk from me, we have Tom Dempster, former South Dakota State Senator. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Lori. John, good to meet you by voice.
it's the best way to meet me, some would say.
All right. Let's start with the big topic of the day, which was last night's State of the Union address. And as you listened to that or watched it, some of the takeaways for how people in South Dakota, you know, what are we looking for in South Dakota in the State of the Union address? And did we get what we were looking for? John Schaff, let's start with you.
Well, I think there's a couple specific things that the president mentioned in his speech last night that he talked about our great farmers. But he had a lot of adjectives, he usually does, about how he's fighting for farmers in rural America. And it was specifically, I think, tied to trade policy. And a lot of economic happy talk in the address. And so I think that's something that South Dakotans are probably paying attention to. He's mentioning things that are very specific to us. You know, it's our congressional legislation. I saw things by all three members of our congressional delegation praising the president. Even Governor Noem had a statement praising Donald Trump for, you know, what they think is a great State of the Union. Both the speech and the actual State of the Union. And obviously they've got political reasons for doing that. And then also, you know, one of the things about State of the Union these days, I actually have had a practice for about 15 years, is I do not watch the State of the Union. But there's this thing called the internet, which allows me to read the transcript the next day.
Yeah.
Because the State of the Union is a TV show, and it doesn't really... It's almost the classic Daniel Boorstin, the great historian's phrase, the pseudo event, the thing that looks like it's a real event, but actually is highly staged. And it sounds like the event last night was even more highly staged than these events usually are. And so there's obviously as I read the speech, it really was a campaign speech and a campaign rally within the confines of the State of the Union. So it's really looks like the Trump team gearing up for re-election. I think we could probably see forecast to us a lot of what the Trump team is going to use as their campaign themes going in here in the election of 2020.
So, John, I'm curious then, do you ever go back and watch any of the video highlights or do you just read the speech? And if you just read the speech, then when you read news reports, are you sometimes confused about what they like?
No,
what,
but it
what
does
happened?
Give you a
yeah,
it
that's
gives
smart.
You a very different experience because, for one thing, one of the reasons I don't like watching the speech is that so much time is taken up with applause.
Yeah.
And it's usually, of course, sycophantic, no matter who the president is, you know, whether it was President Obama with the Democrats or President Trump with the Republicans, you could almost, you know, he could almost say, and today the sun rose in the east, and he gets a round of applause. And it just takes forever to get through these things. So I can read this speech in about 20 minutes, but it takes you over an hour to watch it. But precisely because I don't want to be biased by the theatrics of it and all the guests and all the hooting and hollering and these people boo and these people cheer and this person dressed this way and this person, of course, the big thing. I have seen the video of Nancy Pelosi ripping up the speech. I did see that. But I think, a different experience of the speech because I want to – what I'm interested in is the content of the speech and not the theatrics. But a lot of people are interested in the whole thing. So I probably am missing something. I just don't think it's something that I personally am going to miss.
So how I watch it, Tom, is to watch it along with the PBS or NPR fact-checking reporters as they fact-check the speeches throughout the broadcast. How do you watch the State of the Union? Do you watch it?
As a matter of policy, I try and watch every State of the Union speech that I possibly can. I want to be open to the State of the Union speech. I also want to be naive, and I want to be hopeful, and I want to leave myself open to keep, because I'm a true believer for the capacity to be inspired.
Yeah.
And time again, whether Republican or Democrat, I have found myself hopeful and inspired when I hear the State of the Union. Yes, there are theatrics by design. I don't know if I would go so far as to say sycophants, but I would.
But it's a fine, fine word.
No, I absolutely love the word.
It's and my word of the day.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah. And John, by the way, I love being one as well. I mean, even that's okay. But here's what really struck me last night: this most remarkable. Number one, I didn't want to watch this. I did not want to watch the speech. Number two, I only watched the speech because I was going to be here this afternoon and probably be obligated to say something about the speech. Here's what I found remarkable about it. Number one, I found it remarkable about what was said and what wasn't said. And then after the speech was done, the second it was done, I turned it off.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to hear any fact-checking, or I didn't want to hear what anybody else told me that I should think about this speech. And only this morning, actually early this morning, on my favorite BBC World View, did I understand that I didn't see the dynamics that the president did not shake the speaker's hand, nor did I see the ripped-up speech. But let me go back to the two things that I found remarkable about what was said and what was not said. What was not said is there was not a word about impeachment. Everybody would have expected for him to rail against his prosecutors. It was so wise, if that's possible, it was so wise for him not to do that. It was almost last night as if you saw a phoenix arise from the ashes, or I couldn't even escape the analogy of the Lion King. It was almost the Lion King arising in almost operatic fashion. It was extraordinary by not taking on his prosecutors and the things not said. Huh. The other thing that I found extraordinary are the things that were said. And some of those things, frankly, some of those things I like, the public policy stuff of offering scholarships to kids who want to leave their public schools. I like, though I discount, hospital pricing transparency. Trust me, I know a lot about it because I was the prime Senate sponsor of the South Dakota bill. That is one of the reasons why we have price transparency in the state of South Dakota. So I know it, and I know its limitations. What I didn't like last night about what was said, John, you're a biographer of President Lincoln. Somewhere I read, someplace, that every politician ends up in tragedy. And what I saw last night was the capacity for this tragedy unveiling itself because I caught a sense of hubris, even to talking about manifest destiny and the planting of the flag on the planet Mars. Hmm. I went, oh my goodness, that is such an overstep, in my opinion. That is such an overreach. Tragedy could very well be around the corner, and that left me frightened.
Interesting. There were audible gasps when he used the words manifest destiny and regarding the space program, which you wouldn't have heard as you read the speech, John, but there were quite a few times where you could really see, you know, a break in decorum and a reaction from the people in the room, some of which seemed genuine to me, some of which would seem staged, and some of it seemed genuine surprise. You mentioned, John Schaaf, our congressional delegation and sort of how they shared their support. And, you know, Tom mentioned impeachment. Well, today, as we broadcast live today, the vote is this afternoon. We expect the president to be acquitted and to move on to the next thing. Clearly from his speech, the next thing is an election, includes an election and includes campaigning. The political cost in South Dakota of that impeachment, John, do you anticipate there to be any?
No, I don't think there's any political cost, if anything. You know, one of the things that the president I don't know how would you put it? I guess the phenomena of Donald Trump is his ability to annoy his enemies, and I think amongst his most diehard supporters, they see that as a virtue. Some people see that as a vice because what he's saying really is annoying. He's really doing stuff that people need to speak out against. But I think for his most ardent supporters, you know, when South Dakota is a relatively strong Trump state, from their point of view, Donald Trump is blessed by his enemies. And so I think what impeachment ended up doing is those people who are predisposed to like Donald Trump probably like him even more, because their way of seeing impeachment is that it was partisan Democratic overreach. So I think probably, I don't know what how it'll play out nationwide, but I think probably in South Dakota, if anything, has zero effect, or it actually helped the president by, and his supporters seeing, look at the lengths the opposition will go to try to remove Donald Trump. And they probably buy the Trump rhetoric of this is trying to overturn an election, this is a witch hunt, et cetera, et cetera. And it only makes them want even stronger support by our delegation for Donald Trump.
Tom Demster, Senator John Thune was on with Judy Woodruff in PBS NewsHour, and she was asking him about, you know, the popularity or lack of popularity of impeachment. And he hearkened back to the Clinton era, and he said, you know, when we were impeaching Clinton, we lost some points. People, you know, and he gained. He was more popular, and we were less popular, and he expects the same pattern to play out, that President Trump will be more popular and Democrats will be less popular. Is that just the nature of the game?
I saw John Thune having that conversation last night with Judy Woodruff, and I saw how talented John Thune was, very much along the strain of George McGovern, very much along the strain of Tom Daschle, very much along the strain of Dennis Dugard. And here's the responsibility of a leader such as John Thune, in my opinion, is he had the capacity, as was demonstrated last night, to devour, almost as if he was eating a smorgasbord, to devour all of the controversy that was in Judy Woodruff's question, and to consume it and digest it and come back with his statements, typically with the sense of equanimity that we revere in our respected political leaders in South Dakota, and came back with a sense of calm that said, all of this is really tough, but we're going to be okay. It's not what he said, but that's what you could see in his statement. That's a powerful thing.
He looked relaxed during the State of the Union. He was chewing gum. He had a smile on his face. He looked to me, and that's a value judgment, but when I saw his face, I thought he looks more relaxed than he has in the last couple weeks.
He certainly is a man like many of our best political leaders that is comfortable in his own skin. Yeah. But he also demonstrates that he has the capacity of taking all of our ills, all of the controversy, such as last night, upon his shoulders and bearing them and coming back to us and saying, we're going to be fine. That's real skill. And John, I would argue, you would know this far better than me. You are the third Lincoln biographer that I've met. President Lincoln certainly had that kind of capacity of bearing all of that grief of the nation and all of that hatred and all of that ill will, and coming back and saying, we're going to be fine.
John Schaff, any thoughts on Senator Thune and the way forward?
Well, I think what Tom is getting at, I think obviously John Thune is a very talented politician. I think what I've seen from John Thune, his major talent is to be able, this is what Tom was saying about Lincoln made me think of this, is the ability to take very complicated things and sometimes very controversial things, and to state his point of view in a way that is easy to understand, so to make the complex understandable, but also in a way that he comes off, and I think this is also a talent Tom Daschle typically had, is to come off as with a moderate disposition. Obviously, neither Tom Daschle nor John Thune had what we'd think of as moderate politics. You know, they're not, especially Thune is not a political centrist. But the ability to say things in a way that doesn't poke at the other side or can come off as in a way that everybody can agree with or most people can find agreeable. And I think that's a great talent that John Thune has.
Let's transition to talk about Dusty Johnson, Congressman Dusty Johnson, because he is, this is his first term in Congress, and now he has more than one primary challenger at home. Liz Marty May from Kyle, South Dakota, I think.
Yep.
I got to figure out exactly
right.
Where she's from. Okay, thank
that
you.
That is correct.
Yep, she's a rancher and business owner from Kyle, has cast her hat in the ring and come out with a campaign ad that pretty much says it's time to cull the herd and get Dusty Johnson out of there, and she's the better choice. John Schaff, let's start with you. This is Dusty Johnson is certainly not new to South Dakota politics. He is new to Congress, and now a challenge from Skylar Borglum and Liz May. Republican side, that's not counting Dan Hollis.
I think Skylar Borglum is challenging Mike Rounds.
Thank you. You're right. Yes. I got that wrong. Yep. Yep. Everybody's looking at me, waving at me.
Exactly. Liz May, I think exactly. This sort of goes back to what I was talking about Donald Trump's popularity in the state. What would possess a Republican to primary Dusty Johnson? I think as we went through our election a couple years ago, the primary election with Dusty Johnson, he came off as amongst the three major candidates there in the Republican primary as the more moderate, common sense, if you will, mainstream Republican. That was sort of where he positioned himself. In office, he's had a couple votes, for example, on constitutional authority with immigration, where Dusty Johnson voted against the interest of the Trump administration. And I think that has bothered certain people in the state. And so you see, it seems like Liz May is coming from the more conservative wing of the party. And that whole cull the herd metaphor that she's creating in her ad seems to suggest that Dusty Johnson is a weak calf, if you will. He's the weak link in the herd and needs to be separated from the herd. And so there's a certain weakness in Dusty Johnson. I think that weakness is probably is he is insufficiently supportive of Donald Trump. And one of the things I've noticed over the last, I don't know, say month, 6 weeks or so in Dusty Johnson's public statements and what he puts out for public consumption is I think he's trying to tout more his support for Donald Trump and Trump's agenda, to wit his statement on the State of the Union from last night was very strong in support of the president. And I think he recognizes that this could possibly be a weakness with him, although I think he's probably politically quite strong within the party. He's very well funded and he's got the leadership of the Republican Party. There's a reason why Dusty Johnson got the nomination last time, is because the by and large the leadership of the Republican Party is in Dusty Johnson's corner. But better safe than sorry, correct? So I think we're going to see him stepping up his verbal appreciation of the president.
Yeah, he also said the economy is hotter than a pistol. And when you listen to the language of Liz May's, of her ad, there's a lot of, lingo in there. There's a lot of references to, how we live our lives. How do we speak? How do we talk about ourselves? Tom Dempster, thoughts on a Republican challenger to Dusty Johnson?
A full disclaimer, as a Republican, I've supported Dusty Johnson. I've supported Dusty Johnson because I considered him to be a man of strength, considered him to be a man of character, and considered him to be a man that would seek solutions. I've been particularly watchful or particularly enjoyed him under all of this pressure that you undergo actually serving in that office. And what I see, I'm impressed with. There are certainly some members of the far right. There would certainly be some members of the Republican Party that would say 100% Trump or die. I don't think that that will. I don't think that that will sustain itself. But there are certainly parts of the Republican Party that believe that and express that. And I would guess. I don't know, but I would guess this is an expression of that.
Yeah, Dusty Johnson, you know, was pretty involved in the USMCA trade agreement. Spoke out as that being a great success, and with the ranchers really not loving USMCA because it doesn't include country of origin labeling. You also wonder about ranchers in this state and if they're feeling heard in Washington. And the results of what happens next for that. Let's talk a little bit about state, what's happening in the state house. A few things that are, pretty, I guess predictable in some ways. And where do you want to start, John Schaaf? Anything from our list of possible topics that comes to mind that we should make sure we get to first?
Well, I think what we're seeing is it's a big week because people have to have their bills filed this week, and some things are coming out of the woodwork. Some things are going to fly. Some I suspect will not. Some of these things are relatively small things. We saw yesterday there was a vote on daylight savings, and it was a tie vote in the House, and so that effectively kills it, whether we go to permanent daylight savings. I guess those are the sort of things that are intriguing, not earth-shattering.
But before we move off that, we have to quote Skylar Borglum, and she was quoted in the Argus Leader when they were talking about the debate over daylight savings time. And just, if you could pick the best thing to come out of a lawmaker's mouth all week, as far as quotable for the newspaper for broadcast, is her saying, "Let's not pretend like the economy will shut down and unicorns are going to start flying and we're going to lose our sense of purpose on this planet." So everybody calm down about daylight savings time.
We've got unicorns and hotter than a pistol.
We've got eloquent
politicians.
John, I don't know about you, and Lori, I don't know about you, but I absolutely enjoy the 25 hours we have in the day of daylight savings time.
Yeah. This is the best day of the year.
This was a large argument about kids, West River, East River, kids waiting for the bus, kids coming home in the darkness. We're just cranky about the weather at this time of year, I think. And the fact that this was tied is interesting to me, too.
I will say, I think that House Ag is going to hear the hemp bill tomorrow. I think it's been on the schedule a couple times, and I don't know why it's been delayed, but I don't know if they're working on some things. So right now, I think there's always very controversial subjects. We've got things about LGBT rights. We've got surrogacy bills, which I'm interested in, but we've got Fred Deutsch and his transgendered bill. These make a lot of news, but when it comes down to it, I think probably what people are going to pay attention to are things like hemp, which is kind of a major bill that can have a big effect in our state. Then as we get close to the end of session, it's how are we going to pay our bills when they actually put a budget together and we start to see final revenue projections and spending projections. And so, Tom knows this way better than any of us do, is that a lot of the real action in the legislature is usually backloaded because that's when they're making real decisions about what we're going to spend our money on.
Yeah. When we were out in Pierre, Tom, the governor had done her State of the State and said, she was motivated to get the increases for the big three, the teachers, the state employees, Medicaid providing, reimbursement. Republican leaders said, we got to get that money done for the big three. Democratic leaders said, we got to get that money. It was all, they were talking about appropriations then. Where do you sort of see the State House kind of curving next as they get their bills in and some of the, flashier legislation falls by the wayside or moves forward? Do you agree with John that it's really all about the money in a lot of ways?
Yes and no. Let me talk just for a second about transgender stuff and the kind of purposes that bills like that serve. I always used to be irritated as a legislator when bills like that would come about because they tend to clear the deck in terms of media. Nothing else matters other than these bills. But let's talk about that, and here's why. We have legislators from Sioux Falls that drive 240 miles to Pierre from Rapid City, 210 miles. It is the great convening place. This is the place that we argue public policy. I look at legislation as if you're a gold miner and you're constantly shaking your, what do you call that thing? You're constantly
panning for gold.
You're constantly shaking your pan, and you're hoping that you find that nugget of gold. What these transgender bills do is they bring about problems that most people are know nothing about, and they put them through a public process that helps people to understand that. So as much as I was irritated by bills such as this that sweep the deck, it's also a public process of discourse, a public process of debate, where many of those issues become understood and become settled. So I can't help but see that dynamic that seems to happen every year in the legislature.
Yeah.
Relative to matters of public policy in the state, relative to financial matters, ultimately, in the last days of the legislature, I've never been a believer in zero-sum games. But ultimately, when it comes in the last days of the legislature, it does become a zero-sum game where somebody gets this funding and somebody doesn't get this funding.
I'm going to ask you more about that in just a minute. We do have to pause for a quick break. John Schaff, you'll stick with us here for a minute?
Absolutely.
We'll be right back with more with the Dakota Political Junkies on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're talking politics today with Tom Dempster in the Sioux Falls studio and John Schaff in the Tom and Danielle Allman Foundation studio in Aberdeen. And Tom, I'm hoping you can pick up where we were right before the break, because we were talking about these sort of zero-sum legislation and appropriation. Keep going on that thought, please.
South Dakota is a very conservative place. South Dakota has one of the lowest tax liabilities in the entire country. For some reason, inappropriately so, we seem to celebrate that rather than addressing some of our much-needed necessities. There is a bias in the legislature to have a balanced budget, and by a balanced budget, I mean for the incoming revenue to balance with the outgoing expenses, not borrowing from any of the trust funds, not taking money from here, but income has to meet expenses. Here's the way ultimately that it works. Every bill that impacts the budget has one of two categories. One, it's either a spender, meaning that's additional expenditures, or it's a bleeder. And the bleeder is, here comes a bill that wants to, for example, exempt food from the sales tax. That's going to cost us, what, 27 or 30% of our sales tax revenue. That's a bleeder. There's a significant amount of pressure if you are a spender or if you are a bleeder to be defeated so that you have the capacity of maintaining the budget projections, of maintaining that actual income coming in from the actual expenses leaving. Do not have your bill be classified spender, bleeder.
This is why the bill to remove the tax on guns fell so quickly in committee this week. That's a bleeder, huh?
I think that's a bleeder.
I think they have the math to...
I think that's a bleeder. And I'm going to suspect that there are other issues there
right.
as well.
Yeah, we had some good tape from that yesterday of that conversation is why it's fresh in my mind. John, I want to expand here on something that Tom said about these bills that sort of clear the decks. Broadly speaking, are these also the bills that engage people in the process in a way that's healthy? Is there any, because it just seems like there are, or are they just pure distractions that cause division? How do you sort of see some of these, you know, social bills that surprise people and cause, you know, really get a lot of news coverage?
Of course, those don't have to be mutually exclusive. But I think one thing, and Tom's right about this, is that, you know, up here in Aberdeen at our two Cracker Barrels, one of which I was at this past weekend and the previous weekend I just read about in the news, these are the issues that have dominated the discussion. We had a very interesting discussion about the Circusy bill, 1096, that it seemed like maybe even some minds were changed one way or the other on that bill, as a couple who had gone through Circusy was there and spoke their minds. But one of the things that impressed me was that you know, a couple of our legislators from districts 2 and 3 mentioned that, you know, one thing about our legislature is that every single bill gets a hearing. That means no matter how obscure it might seem to you, no matter you know, how much of a waste of time it may seem to you, anybody who can get a legislator to sponsor a bill, they at least get a day before a committee. And maybe this year there's this bill or that bill that you think is silly and is a waste of the legislature's time. But next year it might be your bill that only affects a small number of people that doesn't seem that important to folks. But they all get a hearing, and that's a good thing. And so that's part of – so we have discussion both at the legislature, but it's also what people are talking about at the Cracker Barrel here in Aberdeen, for example. Sometimes I wish that some of this discourse was a little bit more high-minded than it sometimes is. But nonetheless, it's at least discourse, and it's a way of us talking about these things that are very important to us as a people. And that's a good thing. My only point is that I think when it comes down to the thing that the legislature really spends the most of its time on, usually tends to be bread and butter issues. And that is the kind of thing that tends to be backloaded. And that's where the real attention is ultimately going to end up being.
John mentioned hemp legislation. What's going on behind the scenes? Because last session, this was such a dramatic behind the scenes playing out with the governor and lawmakers. And much work was done over the summer. And now we're back. She's issued her, you know, her guardrails, her guidelines for the legislation. She mentioned it in the State of the State. What's happening now behind the scenes as people talk about hemp in Pierre? Can you predict anything based on your experience?
Oh, Lori, thank you for giving me that, whatever you just gave me. But I have absolutely no idea what's happening behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But I do know that for certain the legislature has made a statement that this shall be. The governor has certainly made a statement that this shall be under only these circumstances. I'm going to guess that the legislature will prevail.
All right. That is Tom Dempster and John Schaff for our Dakota Political Junkies conversation for today. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us. We appreciate your time.
Had a good time. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Lori.